Welcome to another episode of Haldane's Law Matters. Thank you. And today we're talking to Amir Dion Charest, an award-winning entrepreneur, managing director of life and health insurance advisory firm Alaire, and co-founder with her husband of the health information platform Healthy Matters, which is kind of a nice tie-in with Haldane's Law Matters, I think.
Indeed, indeed.
Now, do you want to correct me first of all with any of my pronunciation? I was practicing with you before we started rolling, but I...
All of it was perfect, except for my name. I would say I'm Amélie Dion Charest.
Well, we'll settle. That's wonderful. The way you said that's beyond me. I don't know why it is, but Englishmen are really bad at foreign names and languages.
Well, you'll have to excuse my French-Canadian accent.
Yes. And that's, you're in fact French-Canadian, I was just going to come on to that.
Yeah.
And your hometown, as I understand it, was Montreal.
Correct. Well, I was actually born in Sherbrooke, but I'm a Montrealer, and this is where I studied law at McGill University and where I met my husband, and where I also passed the bar. Many, many years ago, and where I started my career practicing medical law.
I see. Your specialty was medical law.
Correct. I remember first day of law school, we read a medical law case, and it just hit me that I was going to specialize in health law, that I was also interested in bioethics, and I decided for the rest of my legal studies to choose all courses related to health law, and I also did a master's degree in medical law and medical ethics in London at King's College.
It's a gift, isn't it, when at an early age you suddenly find something that draws you in, or you're drawn into it.
Agree. And although I don't practice law anymore, I'm still in the health space, and so I co-own and co-manage Alaire, a health insurance brokerage firm here in Hong Kong. And I also co-founded with my husband a health information platform called Healthy Matters, and it's available in English and traditional Chinese here in Hong Kong.
Well, we'll look that up, and I hope our listeners will too. But I want to transition for a moment, because there you are becoming interested in all of this stuff in Canada. And I think, I've been told that there was a New York chapter. Is there any truth in that?
You're absolutely right. There is a New York chapter. So I practiced law, health law in Montreal for 2 years at Heenan Blakey and moved to New York City for love, to be with my husband. And I had to question my career at the time. I was in New York City looking for a job, and so I decided to stick to my passion, health and healthcare. And I worked for a startup in the diabetes field and did some business development for them in New York City.
So it wasn't law at that stage?
It wasn't law, no.
Did the startup work?
It still exists, indeed. Yes, it does. But I moved on because I very unexpectedly needed surgery in New York City, and this was before Obamacare. And our insurance at the time argued pre-existing condition and didn't want to cover the surgery. And it made me extremely vulnerable. I remember I had to ask my parents for money to pay for the surgery. As everyone knows, American healthcare is extremely expensive. It's the most expensive in the world. And that's actually when it really hit me that if someone like me, a lawyer, well-versed in healthcare, is feeling extremely vulnerable, not knowing what her true options are, not knowing where to obtain credible, trustworthy information to make the right decisions for her health, it hit me that there must be thousands and millions of people out there that really need proper guidance.
Yeah, I'm among them.
And that's guidance, obviously, about health insurance, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Health insurance is confusing. The jargon is really hard to understand. And so it starts with health insurance. And then it's also about the healthcare pathways and what we as patients have as choices. And so in New York City came the idea, actually, of creating my own company and being able one day to provide that type of guidance and information to the public.
So on the occasion in question, did the insurers escape? They didn't pay out?
Well, so I'm a litigator by training.
Yes.
And the litigator in me fought and fought.
Yes.
And I was, in the end, reimbursed 80% of the sum.
All right.
And so I obviously argued that it was not pre-existing condition.
Yes.
And that it was my right to be reimbursed based on the insurance contract I had with them.
I should tell you, I have a friend who, when he retired from the publicly listed company that he was in charge of for many years, joined an insurance company and left them in 2 months. He said it was appalling the way in which every single time there's a claim, the main task is to avoid it.
Right. And I think this is an issue that we also see in Hong Kong, because with individual insurance, so personal insurance, you need to go through underwriting. So you need to declare in good faith all your medical conditions and your medical history. The insurance provider will come back and make a counter offer. We'll exclude this, or we will not cover this, etc., etc. So this means that in Hong Kong, when taking aside work insurance, when you only think of your personal and family life, you really need to sign an insurance policy when you're young and healthy.
There's the trick, isn't it?
That's the trick, because you can find yourself in a situation where you are not insurable. And what we see happening in Hong Kong is that people, especially if they have, you know, well-paying jobs and really good benefits through work, they only rely on their work benefits. But there are two problems with that. One is you may quit or lose your job and not find similar benefits elsewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is, the day you retire, if you don't have a plan B, an individual plan, you may find yourself not insurable because of pre-existing condition that you have.
Yeah. Can I say that resonates? I was on a group plan for the firm, you see. And when I turned 65, I was in a position where I decided it was well time, in fact, a bit too late really, to change to my own personal insurance. And by the time I declared everything, they only insured my left foot. No, I'm being a bit poetic, but I know what you mean. And you get a long list of things they say that they're not going to insure. So the trick is, if you're on a group plan, you should probably either exit the group plan early and have your own insurance, or go on with a group plan but have a second piece of insurance that starts you off anyway.
Yes, our recommendation is obviously to keep your work benefits. There's no harm to that, and they're provided by the employer, but the recommendation is to have, in addition, an individual or family plan that you can keep on renewing and making sure that your pre-existing conditions are covered. And you don't need to take both in and outpatient. Really, when you're insuring yourself against high ticket items and you know, risks that can be extremely expensive, you need to insure yourself against cancer, surgeries, etc. And that's an inpatient plan. So that's the bare minimum that every person in Hong Kong should have as a policy.
And that makes the premium a lot cheaper.
Correct. It's usually half.
And the other trick, it occurred to me, this is from my personal experience, is if you cut out America, you say you're covered for the world but not the United States, then it comes another half cheaper.
You're absolutely right. So when removing the United States, it's usually 50% less.
Yeah.
Now, there is some benefit of having the United States, and I'm mentioning this because it just so happens that last year my son was diagnosed with a rare genetic disease. And obviously we don't wish anyone to have rare issues. But if you are confronted to, you know, having a rare disease or rare condition, there is a benefit to having the United States. In my son's case, for instance, the best child expert is at the Philadelphia Children's Hospital.
Yes.
My insurance plan excludes the United States.
Ah.
Which means that if I were to seek advice from that hospital and that doctor,
it's
not
going to...
Exactly. Mm. Now, thankfully, I can have access to other doctors in Hong Kong, Canada, France, elsewhere, that my insurance covers.
Yeah.
But it's just, people have to remind themselves that even though you can decide to exclude the United States, should you want to make sure you have access to everyone, all experts in the world, there's a benefit to having the U.S.
So again, if I'm drawing on my own experience, because it's probably the experience of our listeners, my view was this. Let's assume you got a cancer and it was going to be the operational bit. So that's the inpatient, and then in my case, 60 days thereafter care. But the trouble with nipping off to the United States is that you're very much on your own, unless, of course, you're in America. So all that aftercare as you come out of surgery, it seems to me, is not it's detrimental to your recovery to be in a strange place with no support system.
That's a really good point. We advise a lot of people in Hong Kong, a lot of expatriates, and I apply this expression in a very broad sense. And so a lot of people will say, well, I have a passport elsewhere, I'll go to the UK, I'll go back to Canada, I'll go back to France. And the truth is, and you're absolutely right, when you have a life in Hong Kong, a job, kids, family, or children in school, it's not easy to say, I've been diagnosed with X cancer and I'm going elsewhere, because you don't have that support system, right? And so it's absolutely essential to make sure that you're well covered in Hong Kong. And in Hong Kong, to be frank, the medical system, both public and private, have a very good reputation.
Yeah.
It's excellent. It has its challenges, and we can talk about those challenges, but from a medical perspective, it's excellent. So it's true that you have to make sure that you're firstly well covered where your life is based, and then having options elsewhere is a little bit secondary.
I think so too. Again, personally, I've had a call upon the medical services this year. I don't normally, this year has been an exception. And I found them outstanding. And I should also mention that AIA deserve a plug, because they were very supportive.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Good to hear.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you about relative expertise around the world, because I suspect you have a feel for it, given your background in medical insurance and health generally. So do we agree that Hong Kong's up there really some of the better places, at least for a number of different ailments?
Well, definitely. I mean, if we look at public system here in Hong Kong, or just the overall health system, first of all, we see one of the highest life expectancies in the world, one of the lowest infant mortality rates in the world. Only 6% of the GDP is spent on healthcare when comparing to, 15% in the US or 11% in Europe. So we have a very performing and robust health system. Now, like all healthcare system, it has its challenges. When talking about the public health system here in Hong Kong, as we know, and we're reading this in, you know, in the media every day, it's overstretched, it's overcrowded, and it's understaffed. As a patient, really, the question you have to ask yourself is, should I be diagnosed with something serious? Example, cancer.
Yep.
Am I better off going public or private? And sometimes it's public for that particular type of cancer, but sometimes it's actually private, because the waiting time in private sector is much, much shorter. So now if we take the private sector in Hong Kong, it's the second most expensive after the United States, okay? It's run like a business, but you have access to...
Can I say it's not run like a business? It's a business.
It's a business, right. You're absolutely right. It's a business.
Yeah.
But one of the key advantages of that business is that you can actually see your doctor, your GP, your specialist...
Instantly.
Yeah. Quite often... you know, on the same day that you've required the appointment, or the day after. And when you look at waiting times and access to GPs elsewhere in the world, Canada, France, this is just such a luxury. There are not enough GPs in Canada, for instance, or what they call family doctors. People have to wait years to have access to family doctor, and they don't have any other options. Whereas in Hong Kong, you can see a doctor on the day you want to see a doctor. So that's one of the key advantages.
Yeah.
In addition to having choice. So this is a behavior that we've noticed in Hong Kong, is that people shop around for doctors, actually.
Yes.
You know, sometimes they have three GPs. And many parents, for instance, have three pediatricians.
Yes.
So there's also the choice that you have in Hong Kong, and that's also a luxury of the private sector.
And the better hospitals are well equipped.
The better hospitals are well equipped, and then it's hard for me to get into the details, because one, I'm not an expert on that aspect, and also it varies greatly depending on the specialty and subspecialty. And
I know that we've just got our first proton machine up and running.
Yes.
For treatment of cancer. And that's a big plus for those that need it, because you'll probably know that the difference between ordinary radiation and proton is that proton attacks light radiation, the cells that are damaged, but it doesn't damage the cells around it. It doesn't mm-hmm. pass right the way through the body.
Yeah.
And I know that that's cost huge sums of money to mm-hmm. put in place. It's just up and running within the last couple of months, so it's very topical at the moment.
Very topical, and this is an example of the things that drive medical inflation rates.
Yes.
So in addition to knowing the cost of private sector or private insurance, what people have to keep in mind is that medical costs increase every year. In health inflation, medical cost inflation is higher than general inflation. So in Hong Kong, for the past decade, if I'm not making any mistake, inflation is between 8 to 10% in the medical industry
per annum.
Per annum, yeah. And that's driven by multiple things, including more sophisticated equipment, right?
Yes.
That is very expensive.
Yeah.
But also the fact that our societies are living longer, but not necessarily healthier. More and more people have our chronic conditions, right? And are seeking medical care for it. And obviously that has a cost.
Yes, yes. So how does one then choose the insurance company sensibly? And can I just put that in context? And I may be wrong about this, so please tell me if I am. My understanding is, despite many of the flaws of the American system, which we could spend many hours talking about, they do apparently have a policy whereby insurers can't throw out the insured once they've taken them on. In other words, you won't be told you're too old, we're not going to renew the contract, or you've claimed too often, we're not going to insure you in future. So they don't have that right. You're a tenant for life with the insurance company as far as your cover is concerned if it's an insurer based in the United States. Is that right or wrong?
So it's a very interesting comment for Hong Kong because it's a little bit tricky. In the past, insurance providers in Hong Kong could actually kick out some of their overclaiming customers or based on a certain age. Today, the vast majority of the health insurance contracts that we see don't allow that to happen, right? So it's renewal for life until you pass away, which is great, which is what we want for consumers and which is what you want for yourself.
It's morally correct.
It's morally correct. And it allows people to truly, you know, invest in a plan for many, many years and decades ahead. However, what happens is that usually in each policy contract, there's a little line somewhere that lawyers can pick up very easily, but that will say that they have the right to discontinue the product and to shelf the product. And so what we've seen in Hong Kong is people being on a policy for, 10 years, and then the product is being shelved, okay? And the insurance provider then makes a decision whether they decide to renew that particular product for the people who onboarded already, right, and just not sell it anymore. In that scenario, our consumers are protected, okay? Or they can decide to say, well, look, we're stopping and we're shelving this and we're actually not even renewing. And we faced this issue with multiple clients of ours in the past, I would say, decade, because a lot of insurance providers have decided to stop some of their products that were losing money on, and therefore their clients had to find a new insurance plan at an age where they already had pre-existing conditions or they were already diagnosed with something, and they had to go through underwriting again and found themselves facing exclusions, surcharges, or just not being covered.
Was there a remedy for that?
There was no remedy for that. So that's why it's really important in Hong Kong to choose, when you choose your personal or family health insurance, to choose a provider that is extremely solid here in this jurisdiction. We've seen over the years a lot of IPMI providers come in and out, and you really have to make sure that you're choosing a solid health insurance provider. Otherwise, you may find yourself in that vulnerable situation.
So it's normally a big reputable company that has a reputation to protect. And I, again, this is a personal question, which I hope is relevant to others. When I was requiring some insurance in Spain so that I could obtain a code and visa there to get over the nonsense of Brexit, as part of the deal to having the golden visa, a Spanish golden visa, which is applicable to the whole of the EU, they wanted me to have a locally based insurance policy. And I was interested to find that I could get one at a reasonable price, and they asked no questions whatsoever about my health.
Mm.
Is that something that the European jurisdiction is exercising? Is that the way they work with insurance?
I think in general, Europeans are a lot more protected in regards to insurance. It's less the case in Hong Kong, although since the inception of Insurance Authority, we're seeing that consumers are more and more protected, but perhaps not to the level that we're witnessing in Europe or even North America.
Yeah, well, I have to say I was surprised. I mean, I think I turned 70 at the point in which I took on the policy. They wanted to know my age, and that was it.
Yeah, and that's hugely beneficial, right?
Yeah,
for consumers.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And it's not the case here in Hong Kong. So a few years ago, the government launched with the insurance industry the VHIS plans with the willingness of better protecting consumers. And I think it's a great step forward, although we need even greater protection for consumers in Hong Kong.
Has the government, it occurred to me while you were talking to say this, that the government could actually set up a private system of its own. It could be they could become the insurers, charging a premium and protecting the citizens.
Yes.
That would be a good platform.
That would be a good thing. Or making insurance mandatory, like in other countries.
Yes.
In the United States,
yes,
it's mandatory.
That's sort of basically Obamacare, isn't it?
Exactly, Obamacare, yeah. In the United States, or if you take the example of Switzerland with La Malle, it's mandatory, because if you make it mandatory, then instantly your pool of people who are being insured is much wider, and therefore you mitigate the risks a lot more, and therefore you can afford, or the insurance companies could afford, covering pre-existing conditions or just offering better terms. But what I'm hearing from the market is that it's not in the plans. I mean, it's not going to happen tomorrow.
No.
But I think that if we keep on educating people on the importance of getting the right health insurance and the right health, financial health protection, we can really push the industry in offering greater benefits to consumers and greater protection to consumers.
And if you're a gambler by nature, and I know one or two people that have taken this route, you say, well, look, I'm going to pay a lot of premiums. I'll self-insure. I'll put aside what would have otherwise been the premium. And if it goes wrong, I'll have money to call upon.
If you want to put aside $500,000 USD, sure. If you want to put aside, you know, if we take the example of some of the most outrageous bills we've seen in Hong Kong for cancer treatment in private sector, it easily starts, you know, at $1 million HKD, but it can be 10 times that price.
Yeah, yeah.
So, if you make the math, if I take my example, I pay about 150,000 HKD per year for my entire family's health insurance, and we're very, very well covered. And if one of us needs a surgery in the year, which obviously we don't wish upon ourselves, but
no.
If I take the example of my husband, who had recently a very simple hernia surgery, well, his surgery was more than 150,000 HKD a year.
Yes.
And already in itself, we justified, you know, the cost of that premium, the investment in that premium,
yeah,
just by that single surgery. So you make the math between what you pay annually, but what it would cost you out of pocket to pay the surgeries or other things.
Yes.
And it makes,
yes,
in my opinion, total sense.
I'm with you, by the way. I agree that people should,
yeah,
if they can afford the premiums, they should insure privately.
Yeah.
It gives a lot of comfort in times of need.
And also, you don't have to pay these amount up front, right? Now insurance providers pay the hospital directly. It's what we call a letter of guarantee, or GOP.
Yes.
And that's also something that every consumer should look into, making sure that your insurance provider can do that for you in Hong Kong. And if they can, it means that you're under a robust plan. And if they cannot, then I would question the benefits, or I would question the insurance provider.
And occasionally, of course, the moment comes when you need to be put into hospital as an emergency, and there's not the opportunity to run it past the insurers and say, are we okay?
Right.
And really, the only thing you can do then is keep them informed as quickly as possible and explain why you're going to be calling on them to pay out in
due
course.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I can tell you have experience. you're absolutely right. If you end up in a private hospital in Hong Kong and haven't had the time to secure a GOP with your insurance provider, you communicate with them as quickly as possible so they're informed, and then by the end of your hospital stay, you can actually take up the bill. And if you end up in public sector, which is the case for any life-threatening emergencies, right?
Yes.
It's mainly public sector in Hong Kong and A&Es that handle life-threatening emergencies, then you don't have to pay much, because as we know, admission to an A&E in Hong Kong is only 180 HKD.
Yes.
And you can pay with your Octopus. So
these
are two...
There's an option.
There, exactly. Two different worlds.
And I don't, this is another thought that I had, that if you're going to have some problems which need surgery, maybe you're going to be in hospital for a week or two, the public hospitals, the Prince of Wales and the Queen Mary teaching hospitals, they've got affiliations with the university. They've got arrangements which the university and the government have come into jointly. They fix the fees, and they have some of the best doctors, the professors, who are looking after the patients in the private wings of those hospitals. And that, I think, is a very good option indeed, because that's the one section that takes out the comment we made earlier, which is that private medicine works as a business.
Mm-hmm.
That's a quasi-business. An arrangement between the government, the hospital, and the universities.
Yes, and these are two very, very strong hospitals, teaching hospitals, as you said. And something that few people are aware of is that even within public hospitals, there are private wings.
Yeah.
And so you can decide to not be in a ward with other patients, but pay a little bit more and have your private room. So even within public system here in Hong Kong, there are options, definitely. And the key advantage is obviously is that you don't have to ask yourself what the incentive of the system is, right? When you're going public, the main incentive is to rationalize cost and provide the best care to the most people in Hong Kong. So there's a level of comfort as a patient that comes with that.
For the patient and, interestingly enough, you may agree, for the insurance company, because they know they're not going to get ripped off by private practice inflating the fees.
Yes.
So that's something that's worth thinking about for individuals that find themselves with medical needs. Even if they've got insurance, they can be more comfortable that they're going to be fully covered.
Yeah.
Well, that's been very interesting indeed, and I hope that our listeners will find it interesting as well, because in the end, most people at some point are going to need medical help, and most people require insurance, and occasionally they need lawyers, because the insurance companies can be devils at times. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me. This was a real pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for us as well. Thank you.